Goodness, I want to thank the choir. That was adorable, and I thought I'd heard every song about dogs. There's a new one. Thank you so much. And I want to thank everybody who, for some reason, invited me here to speak. I mostly want to thank my friend Sharon Brandt, who knows I love foxes and brought this cute little fox for me today. So I thank her. Also want to thank Pat Jobe. I want to thank Barbara Gill for putting all this together and coordinating it. And I want to thank my Sisterhood of Covenant Dog Group that are all a part of this. So I think the writing was on the wall for me when I was about 4 years old. I would always be outside playing with friends. You know, back then you could do that. And in California, in San Francisco. And my mother would call me in because my favorite show was coming on, Lassie. And I would walk in, and as soon as the music came on, I would start crying. And my mother and father thought that great sport, and they loved to giggle about that, although I had no idea until I was about 30 when my mother told me. I thought it was perfectly natural. So I guess I was doomed, and it all started with a collie. For most of us, our connection with the animal world started with the animal companions that we have at home. We learned many life lessons from them. In fact, one of our companion animals, our dog or our cat, might have been the first loved one of ours that passed away when we were young. And so depending upon how our parents and how people around us responded to that may have influenced how we dealt with death going forward. And in fact, we learned a lot of other things from animals. And example, I learned to leave animals alone when they wanted to be left alone. Once again, in California, at around 3 or 4 years old, and I am wondering now what my parents were doing exactly since all these things happened to me then. But anyway, I wanted to pet this Siamese cat that was a neighbor's cat. And I went after that cat, and I knew that cat wanted me to pet it, and I would follow that cat everywhere it went, and one day, I managed to catch the cat, and the cat managed to scratch my face totally up. And so as we were heading to the hospital, I am glad to tell you of my mother's perfect response to the situation. What did you do to that poor cat? I've been telling you to leave her alone. I think my mother's defense of the cat really helped me develop even more empathy for animals. And I'm very glad that she handled it that way because I could have very easily been afraid of cats from then on. But she didn't. So we also learned the concept we've all heard of unconditional love. We all say that our animals give us unconditional love. We love having something that's not going to be irritated with us when we're late coming home. We love having a friend who isn't going to judge us if our house is a mess, or isn't going to be irritated if we haven't called, or whatever. We get to come home, and this animal's just going to love us, and they're just going to be darn glad we made it. In fact, we talk about how our animals rule us. I have friends that say, my cat owns me. And I have friends that say, I can't move in the bed with all these dogs around. We say these things as if we can't possibly help the situation, that we don't have any control over our own lives, and we couldn't just leave those dogs outside the bedroom. My guess is that the human enjoys having those dogs and cats on the bed, probably more than the dogs or cats even care to. Does any of this sound familiar? Yes. Well, you know you're a dog person when you can't see out of the passenger side of your window because there's nose prints all over it. Anybody understand that? You like people who like your dog, but you're real nervous about people that don't. You have 32 different names for your dog. Most of them make no sense, but she understands. Heck, We even named covenant groups after barking dogs. And that's why I'm here. I was working at Animal Care as their community relations coordinator, as Barbara told you earlier. And I got a donation from the Barking Dog Covenant Group of the Greenville Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Well, I hadn't found any kind of congregation that was liberal enough for me and my husband in Greenville. So I thought, have I found a place for me? And so have I found a group that I can tolerate? But mostly, have I found a group that can tolerate me? And I did, and I'm so glad, and I love the women in this group, and I'm so appreciative. But now, I'm spending a little too much time on dogs, I think. And as I was looking up things about cats, you find things that say, how you know you're a crazy cat lady? Well, everybody that has a cat isn't a crazy cat lady. So actually, there are some reasons why it's okay to be a cat person. They're much more easygoing. They just like to sleep and eat, just like you might like to do. You can relate to them. Again, just like you, they like to sleep and eat. You don't feel like going out for exercise? Well, neither do they, ever. It's the perfect arrangement. With all the animal lovers here, and I'm betting there's quite a few, where do you draw the line when it comes to animals? The majority of us have animals in our homes. We wouldn't ever dream of hurting our animals. We suffer when they suffer. We have compassion for them. We have empathy for them. We feel what they're feeling. We can tell when they're feeling sad. In fact, we care so much that when it's their time, we let them go. And we're fortunate that we can even do that. My group of friends rescues dogs or cats they find astray. They would never dream of buying from a breeder, I say with a sneer, and always beam with pride if they've adopted their companion from a rescue group or a shelter. It's even better if they're minus an eye or a leg. They automatically get their dog or cat spayed or neutered when they find one, and they understand that shelters are full to the brim and that they don't all make it out alive. So what makes folks take that extra step? What is it that makes us go from loving our dogs like Sela, who, not quite sure where she's going. Sela? Jim? She's a girl, so she won't be lifting her leg there. I just wanted to warn you guys, everything's okay with that. but what makes people take these extra steps? What makes some of us spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars helping an animal? What does that? What makes us reach out to help an animal that we might rescue and then find a home for, even though it might break our heart to love that animal and then find another home for it? I know in my case, with all of my knowledge in my head about animal welfare problems and pet overpopulation, starting a magazine to educate and starting Speak for Animals to offer education and lower no-cost spay-neuter helped me to channel my extreme empathy for the animals, and let's face it, depression. After attending a couple of animal rights conferences, it was 2003 and 2004, the more I learned about the plight of animals on this earth, the more depressed I became. And the worst thing you can do when you're depressed is nothing. So with medication and action, I started the proactive group Speak for Animals, with the goal of targeting spaying and neutering animals that are most at risk. Pit bulls, which there's more pit bulls than any other breed entering shelters. Feral cats. Helping people on government assistance be able to afford it. And going into Judson, Woodside, Brandon, Sterling. Most of you probably know where that is. If you don't know, it's because you never would ever probably want to go there. Going into the lowest income parts of Greenville and spaying and neutering and giving vaccinations for free. That's what Speak for Animals does. And I have information here if you guys want to learn more about us or get more involved. So, and we were just there yesterday, signing up people for free spays and neuters, and we do it compassionately. We may see somebody with a dog on a chain in miserable shape, and we don't go up there and judge them, because a lot of the people we deal with don't even have the money to buy their own food. So that's what helped me. And then when people say, well, don't you care about people? I mean, you're always helping animals. Don't you care about people? There's always a person attached to every animal we help. And those people are very, very appreciative because they couldn't afford it otherwise. So if you're interested in working on, if this is a part of your passion, because everybody in here has a passion for something, and if you want to help the burden of all the animals going into the shelters and want to work on the proactive side, get involved with us and Speak for Animals. But then, you know what? There's more animals than just dogs or cats. What about birds? I understand there's a lot of you in the congregation that like bird watching. My husband and I love feeding the birds. We love watching all the beautiful birds. We're fortunate that there's some bluebirds that come back. And they nest right on our porch. And we're so excited to watch it. People even go on bird watching trips. We love birds. We consider them part of our community. And then comes Thanksgiving. And we eat turkeys. And we eat chickens. And they're birds, but they're somehow different than a bluebird or different than a sparrow. So, what happens? Where do we draw that line when it comes to animals? So, are some of you squirming? You were going, you know, she's made it pretty easy for us so far, but we knew at some point she was going to get to some stuff to help that are going to make us squirm. Well, the point today is, how do we look at animals? And why do we love one and not love another? In the book, Some We Love, Some We Hate, and Some We Eat, Hal Herzog cites a phenomenon that University of Oregon cognitive psychologist Paul Slavik calls psychic numbing. An example of this, and you might remember this, they happen from time to time. I believe this one was in New York. But a cow jumped out of a truck heading to slaughter, and people were chasing her all over town to try to catch her. And people loved the fact that that cow jumped to freedom and eventually went to a farmed animal sanctuary. And people loved it, and they were rooting for the cow, and they didn't want the cow to go to slaughter. Well, what about the millions of other cows that didn't make it out of that truck heading to slaughter? That is psychic numbing. We can focus on one, but a lot of us can't get our arms around millions or billions of turkeys that are going to die for this Thanksgiving. We can't get our arms around it. It's just too big, so we're just not even going to try. This isn't a new thing for you guys to hear. I think Pat Job has spoken on vegetarianism twice. So, and you guys have heard about the billions of animals killed every year. We understand the environmental impact of all the waste. The use of water for animals, all the grain. But what about tradition? We've been eating turkey for years. We can't take that off the menu. No way. Well, sure you can. A lot of people are. If any of you guys don't have plans for the holidays, my husband and I are going to Full Circle Farm Sanctuary for a vegan soul food Thanksgiving. So let me know, and that's at 5 o'clock on Thanksgiving, if anybody's interested in going. I guarantee you it'll be really great food. So once again, how do we cross that line? Another thing I do, and I'm so fortunate that I get to do these great things, is I teach for an organization called the Healing Species, and I take Sela with me. And The Healing Species is all about compassion education. You would love the topics. I get to speak about tolerance. I get to speak about diversity, keeping your heart, all these great things. And it's all to try to help the kids feel better about themselves and their situations so that when they become adults, they won't repeat what their parents and what they've seen. And it's incredible. So I was asking the kids on Thursday and Friday at Grove Elementary, where I teach, and I said, I'm going to be talking to the Greenville Unitarian Universalist Fellowship about animals and empathy. What do you want me to talk about? And they said, oh, tell them about Binti. And some of you may have already heard about Binti. Binti was a gorilla, a mother gorilla, and I believe it was in Chicago, in a zoo. And Binti was just hanging around her enclosure, and all of a sudden, a three-year-old little boy fell 20 feet into her enclosure. You guys might remember that now. And he passed out. So he's laying on the floor, and everybody is thinking, oh my gosh, he is in there with a gorilla. What is she going to do? And nobody knew what she was going to do. Now, Binti was forced to live her life in a very small enclosure. She could have thought, well, gee, this is my chance. I can teach these humans a lesson for keeping me in here. But that's not what Binti did. Binti very gently picked up that little boy and took the little boy and set him down right by the door where she's seen humans coming in and out. That's what fourth graders wanted me to tell you about empathy. Another story they wanted me to tell you about empathy was about a 12-year-old boy in Canada who got separated from his parents in the woods. And he was scared and alone, and it dropped to zero. And he was shivering, and he was crying, and it was night, and all of a sudden he felt something furry come up against him, and he couldn't tell what it was. It was night. And he thought it was a dog, of course. You know what happened? He woke up. It was three beavers. Who knew? Beavers. Now, I don't always believe everything I hear, so I really did have to check that out. But that's an amazing story of animals and their empathy to us. The stories go on, and they show time and time again the importance of animals to us, animals to each other. That's what the students wanted you to know. So I'm here to give you a way out of your conflicted conscience. Isn't that good of me? For those of you who have a real heart for helping companion animals, there's a lot of local groups that need your help. Speak for Animals being one. There's a lot of national groups, and we can all help in varying degrees. Some of us want to get out there. We want to go into Judson. We want to knock on doors and help people. Some of us just want to write a check. So whatever it is, there's all sorts of things you can do that help you, because that's what helped me. Sitting on the sidelines going, my gosh, I can't take all the problems for animals, didn't help me. You can also do things like buy products that don't test on animals. It's very easy to find if you Google. Just look it up, all sorts of lists. You can also not buy fur or leather. One of my favorite books is Vegan Freak, Being a Vegan in a Non-Vegan World. The authors give a compelling reason to go vegan already, and they're very real about it. They look at it as living your values. And they quote John Stewart, if you don't stick to your values when they are tested, they're not values, they're hobbies. So, as you pet your dogs and cats, remember that they're not the only animals that feel like you do and like we do. You can go as far as your line takes you. The further your line, the happier your conscience will be.